Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
It's morning in Montana. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Well, good morning. Good morning. Welcome to Montana Talks. This is John Jackson sitting in for Aaron Flint. He is over in Big Sky. He's going to come to us live at the 8 a.m. hour. And I think right now he's on the phone. Let's see if we can. We're going to do a quick comm check. You there, Aaron?
Hey, John, I can hear you. You hear me?
I got you, brother.
Hey, perfect. Yeah, man, you're sounding, you know, you open up so calm and it's like you have tea instead of coffee. I'm overlooking Lone Peak. It's just like, wow, this is really nice. I should start my mornings every morning kind of like this.
Well, we'll start out like NPR. Welcome this morning to Montana Talks. We're going to talk about the ceasefire between Iran and Israel.
Some of you will be disappointed because many of you were hoping Donald Trump was getting us into World War III instead of ending World War III. So the NPR listeners would be very disappointed that Donald Trump just keeps kicking their you-know-what every single day.
I can't even believe that we were here yesterday morning talking about the history-making war and the strike and all of that, and now just in 24 hours now we have the next piece of incredible history of the ceasefire.
Yeah, it was amazing, you know, driving up to Big Sky yesterday afternoon, and I was hearing the news about the missiles being fired towards Al Udeid Air Force Base, but then it very quickly became clear it was a lot like the Soleimani response, where Iran was firing some missiles, so they could say they fired some missiles, they gave us the heads up ahead of time, and people got out of the way, and then, of course, most of the missile defenses in Qatar, ours and theirs, combination, it sounds like, blocked it, and then, boom, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, President Trump announced as a ceasefire, but there was kind of a time delay on the ceasefire. I think that's what led to a little bit of anger from President Trump that we just heard about in the news break.
Yeah, you're looking at some of that. I'm following my buddy Raylan Givens, who is former IDF. He's on X, and he reports this stuff. He can read the Israeli news and reports this stuff just by the minute, and this stuff just went crazy overnight with a tit-and-tat back and forth between Iran and Israel. Who was gonna stop first? And President Trump got a little miffed this morning. I don't know if you saw his comment.
I was listening. So I had Fox and Friends on my phone while I was getting ready and getting some stuff on the website from the hotel room. Let's go to President Trump, and you hear the helicopter getting ready in the background as he's heading off to the NATO meetings. And all of a sudden, he drops an F-bomb, and they were not ready for it. Basically, he's like, they need to get this F together. And he was going after, he even went after Israel, saying, hey, you guys let off a barrage after the ceasefire. But I mean, in Israel's defense, like, they were allowed to keep it going until the time was up and the ceasefire officially went into effect. So there was a gap there.
Yeah, I think President Trump thought that this was just going to stop right now on both sides. They were going to go right up to the minute, and even Iran went over the line, but they were going to try to get in their last hits there.
It's like you're at the fights and he goes ding, 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 and the guy gets in one more punch.
There's the music, Aaron. Do you hear it on your end?
I do, yeah, I hear it, yeah. So you can wrap us up. You got the time fuse back there.
Okay, here we go. We will be right back in just a couple of seconds with Montana Talks.
Take a look at your Montana weather for Billings and Bozeman. With mainly sunny conditions across the area for today, we'll see high temperatures ranging from the mid and upper 70s. Isolated shower storm chances late towards Billings mainly. As we head into tonight, still a few isolated showers or storms possible, mainly towards the Billings area. Partly cloudy otherwise, with overnight lows from the mid-40s in Bozeman to the mid-50s in Billings. That will see partly sunny skies Wednesday. That's a look at your Montana weather on Montana Talks. I'm Paul Trombley.
Securing America.
Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy gave the commencement address Monday at the graduation ceremony for the Merchant Marine Academy, which helps facilitate trade and transportation on the seas, including military logistics and support. Duffy thanking the graduates for their service, which he said is extremely needed.
This administration understands that restoring maritime dominance is critical to America's national security.
The secretary praised the graduates' families for raising sons and daughters with admirable qualities.
They have grit and they're patriots.
And told the graduates to say yes to adventure and not to settle.
When you raise the bar for yourself, something remarkable happens. You raise the bar for everyone around you. That's what it means to be a true leader.
Duffy urged the graduates to continue living via the Merchant Marine Academy's motto, deeds, not words. Kip Mielewski, Fox News.
Hey, Clay, if there was a summer camp for critical thinking, we'd be the chief counselors. Those jellyheads in June would be intellectual warriors by August. Be a lot of fun, too. Some Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure references thrown in.
This podcast, like a daily dose of that, minus the campfires, archery, and pranking the girls.
The bona fide boot camp for critical thinking. You can get in on it for free at the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search our names, Clay and Buck. Listen and subscribe.
Hey, everyone.
Big topics. Big ideas. Big Sky. Montana Talks.
Welcome back to Montana Talks. This is John Jackson in the studio. We got Aaron Flint over on remote and Big Sky. Don't forget the number to call out there, 406-294-0970. And Aaron Flint is still on the line. I think we're going to get back to that topic we were talking about a minute ago. You still out there, Aaron?
Yeah, gosh. But by the way, is that breaking news? The phone lines are working today, huh? That's exciting because I know people want to call in and mix it up with you.
Yeah, that's the first thing when Caden answered the door this morning. When I called in, I was like, oh, the phones are working. And he's like, yeah, you know, just cross your fingers here.
Yeah, we'll see. Hey, as long as you got coffee, you know, like you got coffee, everything else is fine. We're good to go. Well, man, yeah, we can go back to this topic of the ceasefire that was brokered with Israel and Iran. Matt, that happened fast. President Trump was already calling it the 12 days war. But, you know, the other thing I was thinking about, John, yesterday as I was driving up to Big Sky, you know, with the beautiful view, of course. You know, there's something about driving around Montana, especially in the mountains or out on the prairie, where you can just think more clearly. And I was sitting there driving. I was like, man, if there were missiles fired at, you know, bases in Qatar and elsewhere, who knows what threat is with inside of our own borders right now? Well, we have a pretty good idea. And it just got me thinking, you know what? This is all the more reason our United States Supreme Court needs to wake the hell up and stop fiddling around while the nation burns from this illegal immigrant invasion right now, especially given how serious this situation was getting and still could get, right? And so I saw actually through your ex, you had a good write-up, I think from Sean Davis, talking about how already you've got liberal federal judges trying to go around the United States Supreme Court, that their decision they just put out yesterday.
Yes, that was a huge decision, which they came out and said, yes, President Trump and the U.S. government can deport illegal aliens to third-party countries. And I think mostly that's used when you have a case where their home country, that illegal alien's home country, won't accept them. And that doesn't happen very often. But it's also a very big deterrent to some of these people. Get out of our country or we'll send you to Africa. Right, we'll send you to El Salvador, somewhere you don't like. Right? but then you have they rule that way, and then some, you know, lowly district judge up there, I believe it's up in Boston, Massachusetts, comes out and says, "No, it doesn't apply to this case. No, you can't do that with these people." And yeah, I don't know if you saw it, Stephen Miller, the president's deputy chief of staff, yesterday said, "We're not going to tolerate this. Watch today. There's going to be fireworks."
Yeah, as there should be. This is outrageous. It's a straight up lawlessness. However you put it in your ex post was spot on. Yeah, especially given the threats facing this country right now. I did see, you know, somebody, I forget who it was, but I'm sure a million people thought of the same joke. They joked on X, you know, Judge Boasberg orders Trump to rebuild Iranian nuclear facilities.
Yeah, that's it. We actually joked about that back, about months ago on your show and I on Twitter there about, you know, when was going to come the point where some federal judge was going to tell Trump to, like, turn around a battleship or something like that. And sure enough, they tried to tell him out in California last week that he couldn't deploy the National Guard. It's part of his duties as commander-in-chief.
It's just crazy. Well, hey, real quick here, John, I know you're going to take over until 8 a.m., so let me just share one more thing with our friends listening across the state and across the nation and possibly even overseas. I know while you're in the house as well, we get some great friends listening in overseas. We've had troops listening in from bases overseas in the past. They may be listening in right now, too. But, you know, I joked earlier about something about driving out in the mountains, driving out on the prairies. You can think a lot more clearly. That's why I love having a camper, for example. Man, you just get out, especially if you can get out of cell phone signal range, shut everything off. But there's just something about being out on the water, being out camping that just, you know, you're able to think more clearly. And then when you come back from a good weekend, you can be ready to rock and roll at work. That's why I got my pontoon and my camper, my travel trailer from Brett's RV and Marine. They got great folks. They'll tell you where the good fishing spots are on the lowdown and good camping spots. But yeah, they've got locations. Brett's RV and Marine, they're in Lockwood, right there in Billings. Butte, go see Brad, the Air Force JTAC, Ranger Tab guy over there. And then, of course, Missouri. Zula, and this family-owned business, they've got the largest inventory in five states for boats and RVs, but go to brettsrv.com to do a recon on the inventory if you want. But John, thanks for covering down in the studio, and I might check back in with you probably in the 8 o'clock hour.
You know, I'm just a little nervous here this morning, Aaron, because, you know, I walk in here this morning, and not only does the phones work, but your remote works. So, I mean, this is just going, it's going too good right now. So, I'm expecting at any moment, Kane's giving me the, don't say it, don't. He's going to, shit, no, don't jinx us. He's giving me the sign.
I thought you'd be in there cutting the wires again. Oh, for some reason, man, we can't hear Aaron. I'm just going to have to be the sole occupant of the show for the next 4 hours, which is all right with me. I'll just go hike the mountain here.
Remember Al Haig back in the day? I'm in charge now here in the White House.
King of the castle, king of the castle.
Master of my domain.
Clothing with Caden there. Don't subject Caden to more abuse. We need to keep him around, you know?
Oh, no, he's in a good mood this morning because I think he's actually so nervous, all right? And he's just holding up his energy drink, so he's wired for sound. But we're all just hoping we don't have another repeat of a remote incident like we had last time I was in here.
Who made the coffee for the breakfast flakes? So, I mean, I'm usually there to make it for those guys in the morning. You know, they demand their coffee in the morning, and, you know, they're give them a hard time about being too hoity-toity. They need somebody else to make coffee for them.
Oh, they're hammered. And I go by their studio a couple of times, and they're shouting and yelling, and they're having a good time.
Oh, yeah, those guys are great.
Well, there comes the music, Aaron. We will get back to you at the 8 a.m. hour, I guess, or if you want to pop back out anytime, just come back on in.
Yeah, we'll see. Just send me a text, put up the bat signal.
Sounds good.
All right, man, thanks a lot.
This is the Montana Economic Minute.
There's a concept used to describe different ways of producing energy known as energy density. You might think of it as the amount of land needed to produce a given amount of power from different fuels, wind, solar, coal, gas, or nuclear. Physical footprint on a wind farm or a solar farm is huge compared to fuels with higher energy density such as gas and especially nuclear. But as blogger Austin Vernon has described, despite the extremely high energy density of nuclear fuel, technology has not emerged as a low-cost way to produce electricity, especially compared to alternatives like gas. And the reasons why might surprise you. Yes, regulation and fear of contamination are factors, but the biggest factor is purely economic. Under current technology, a controlled nuclear reaction energy source is a low-heat source, much lower than a combined cycle gas turbine, which has more than twice the thermal efficiency. The only way to get a lot of power out of a nuclear plant is to massively scale up the entire process, and that's expensive. I'm Patrick Barkey.
Brought to you by the University of Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research.
I'm Chad Pergram with the Speaker's Lobby. Democratic California Senator Alex Padilla bolted from Washington to be on the ground in L.A. amid the riots. And that's when the fracas unfolded between the senator and federal agents at a news conference given by Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem. Republicans pounced on Padilla, arguing he should have stayed in Washington. Quote, the fact that he's in California and not D.C. while the Senate is voting means he's not as concerned about doing his job here, said Senate Majority Leader Steve Scalise. But Scalise conceded he's gone home to Louisiana when hurricanes have threatened the state. state. Outraged Democrats thundered on the Senate floor, railing against the plight of Padilla. Quote, this is the stuff of dictatorships. It is actually happening, said Democratic Hawaii Senator Brian Schatz. But the outrage was not limited to Democrats. Quote, I've seen one clip. It's horrible. It is shocking at every level. And it's not the America I know, said Republican Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski. Confidence and trust is waning among lawmakers. And several conceded they're not sure congressional leaders can dial back the tensions. With the Speaker's Lobby, Chad Pergram, Fox News.
This is Poll Parade with Fox News Director of Polling, Dana Blandon.
Americans generally think immigration is a good thing. 70% in our Fox News survey say legal immigrants who come to the U.S. help the country. On immigrants living here illegally, nearly 60% favor deporting them. At the same time, by a 32-point margin, voters think the Trump administration's enforcement of immigration laws has gone too far. Most Democrats and more than half of independents feel that way, and 21% of Republicans agree. They might be thinking about President Trump sending the National Guard and U.S. troops to Los Angeles in response to protests of ICE raids on illegal immigrants. More think that made things worse by about 20 points. Even so, voters narrowly think local governments should cooperate with ICE in enforcing federal immigration laws and support giving local governments full control. And on the key question of whether Trump's immigration policies are making the country safer, an equal number say yes, I say no. I'm Dana Blanton, and that's your Poll Parade.
With the Daybreak Ag Report on the Western Ag Network, I'm Lane Nordblund. Taking a peek at the weekly crop progress report out yesterday from USDA, we see that 96% of the nation's winter wheat was headed as of Sunday, 1 point behind last year's average. Harvest moved ahead 9 percentage points to reach 19% complete nationwide as of Sunday. That's still 19 points behind last year's pace. The crop condition is 49% remaining good to excellent, down 3 points from last week. As for spring wheat, it's spotty depending on where you are at. USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey.
Most of the crop, 93%, has emerged. That is 4 points behind the five-year average of 97% and last year's 99%. Montana, where drought has been an issue, just 79% emerged, far behind the five-year average of 98%. And with recent rains, that may improve, but certainly it is a late start for the crop there. Spring wheat heading 17% on June 22nd, five-year average 18% last year, at this time 16%. The heading range is from 7% headed in Minnesota all the way up to 65% in Washington State. And finally, a look at spring wheat condition for the week ending June 22nd, showing 54% of the crop good to excellent, 15% very poor to poor. A week ago, we had 57% of the crop rated good to excellent, 9% very poor to poor, far below last year's numbers. This time a year ago, we were at 71% good to excellent, 4% very poor to poor. Real spotlight on Montana, where 42% of the crop currently rated in very poor to poor condition, much of that due to drought early in the growing season.
But weather also impacting crops and communities. Rippey shares more on the derecho that northern tier states saw over the weekend.
It occurred across south central and southeastern Montana. And then that line of thunderstorms pushed eastward and matured and became quite intense as they moved across the entire state of North Dakota, just clipping some of the northern counties in South Dakota. And that derecho really did not run out of steam until it had passed through much of northern Minnesota and even into northern Wisconsin and the upper peninsula of Michigan, still seeing some overnight wind damage reports as we moved into the pre-dawn hours of the 21st.
Reports showed verified wind gusts of 80 to 100 miles per hour.
Rodeo fans, make plans to join Rodeo Roundup for an action-packed PRCA rodeo you won't want to miss. From bronc busting to bull riding to mutton busting for the little cowpokes, dust off your boots and join us for a wild ride filled with fierce competition, family fun, and rodeo tradition at its best. Rodeo starts 7 p.m. on July 3rd and 2:30 p.m. on July 4th. Tickets available at the gate. Make Roundup Montana your Independence Day tradition. Follow Rodeo Roundup's Facebook page for more information.
Hi, this is Joe Gargis from the Western Livestock Auction in Great Falls, Montana. As a livestock auction market owner and member of LMA, I believe it's time for our industry to align and drive meaningful changes that will safeguard a future for ranchers. I am asking all who are hearing this to sign on to this effort as we work to achieve and maintain egg-friendly tax policy, improve risk management tools, access to labor, flexibility for livestock haulers, and create support for young and emerging livestock producers. Now is the time. Learn more and sign on at thecommongroundsummit.net.
The U.S. Supreme Court could soon decide the future of thousands of lawsuits tied to Bayer's Roundup weed killer. Justices are set to consider this week whether they'll hear Monsanto v. Durnell, a case centered on whether federal pesticide labeling laws override state-level cancer warning requirements. Bayer says conflicting lower court rulings make it time for the nation's highest court to weigh in, arguing federal law should ensure uniform labeling. A decision from the court could have major implications for product labeling lawsuits tied to glyphosate. For the Western Ag Network, I'm Wayne Northlund.
Montana Talks, uniting the Treasure State, one conversation at a time. Here's your host, Aaron Flint.
Welcome back to Montana Talks. This is John Jackson sitting in for Aaron. Once again, the phone number to call, 406-294-0970. We already have a caller on the line. That is on Niz on line one. Niz, do you hear me?
I do.
I know you have an update for everybody on what's going on with all the crazy back and forth with the ceasefire.
I do, and I just wanted to add something to President Trump's saucy comments this morning and why he's all in the lather. You know, for now, the skies over Israel and Iran are quiet, but, you know, this fragile ceasefire, it's not going to hold without pressure, and let's be honest, Israel isn't trying to win a popularity contest. I mean, just decades ago, they were being marched into the gas chambers, so they're done with appeasement. We can call this a ceasefire, but it's honestly the regime's surrender, plain and simple. But let's look, just look quickly at what happened. Since Iran's nuclear sites were destroyed, we have Arab nations eyeing the Abraham Accords. Regional support for Iran has crumbled. China and Russia are backing off. So now the focus returns back to Gaza. That is, if the ceasefire should hold. So Iran's future is now truly in the hands of its own people should they rise up to topple this regime. But let's not forget, Mossad is embedded all over that nation. Those operations are not going to cease just because there's a ceasefire. So for now, this is really a win-win for the president, because if a wounded regime clings to its path of terror, it's pretty clear they can easily be finished off by the United States and Israel.
What was going on this morning? You said, I was going over our friend Raylan Givens, his account there on X, and it appears, though, that the last thing I saw was that Iran actually violated to the last hour, violated the time of the ceasefire and were firing rockets at Israel. And then Israel was returning fire. And that's when you saw President Trump kind of, you know, lose his patience and drop the F-bomb there to the to the media. Am I getting that right? Is that what happened?
Yeah, I mean, there were just some skirmishes, and that's completely expected. Everybody wants to be the last one to deliver the final blow, and Iran did deliver quite a blow. They killed four people and destroyed quite a few buildings. But, I mean, that's over with now, but I can see why President Trump, screaming his head off with no tie on, he was in a lather about it. You know, nobody's really thinking about the ages of the leaders in the region. These are the last gasps of that generation. I mean, Bibi and Trump both had parents that, you know, were alive during World War II. I mean, these men are from a completely different era, and they have a last few chances at cementing their goals for all of history. So all sides are taking extreme measures to make sure the next generation that comes in can easily and quickly end this godforsaken regime should they begin to rebuild any nuclear ambitions.
You mentioned the side benefits of this a minute ago, of everything across the region happening, and there are more. And if you would like to stand by, we got a hard break here. If you want to stand by, we'll get into that a minute when we come back here. We got about 10 seconds left to go. Stand by, and we'll get into that right after the break. We're back. That was just a quick Fox News update down there at the bottom of the hour. You still with us, Niz?
Yep, I am.
One thing, you talked about the great side benefits of this operation across the region, and we actually hit this on our spaces the other day about how this could and should play into Ukraine. And sure enough, breaking this morning on Zero Hedge, Trump and Zelensky set to meet at NATO summit. And what I think needs to happen here is, you know, here we are, we're almost to July, and this was one of President Trump's number one campaign promises, is that he was going to put an end to this Ukraine boondoggle. And both sides are obviously dragging their feet here. But with this very successful, and how do we put this on the radio, big man energy that he got from this operation, he should take that right into this meeting with Zelensky and then with Putin, and also use the same strategy, and they give these guys a time limit, just like he did with Iran, 60 days. All right, gentlemen, you got 60 days to come up with a deal. After that, everything's on the table, and that includes complete pullout from Ukraine and severe sanctions on Russia.
Well, I couldn't approve more of that strategy. I mean, the Middle East is just poised for major realignment. I mean, Israel has just emerged as the undisputed regional superpower, and the Abraham Accords are going to begin to normalize relations with the Saudis and the Israelis and other Arab nations that want to get in on the benefits of being Israel's partner and President Trump's partner. You know, he has the momentum to start shifting other countries and reshaping their behavior, because that's what this is. These are shaper operations that he's going to be pulling off in the next week with all of these other nations. So he can do this because he has a lot of influence now that all of these Arab nations that normally loathe and despise and refuse to work with Israel are now starting to do this. And he can also begin to shape what's going to happen in Gaza and how we start to wrap that disaster up and try and make something come of that.
Yeah, a question for you. Everybody has heard for years now, you know, 20 years, the little nasty phrase that gives everybody the willies is regime change. And we all know that from our past 25 years of experience when, you know, particularly when the United States is involved, anytime we're talking about regime change, that ends up being 20 years, 10, 20 years in a country and trillions of dollars and thousands of our boys lost, killed, and all that. That's, wonder what we're going to do with that with Iran, and where does that go? We're coming up to another break here. We'll hit that. Hang on one, Nez, and we'll hit that right when we come back from the break, if you've got time.
Okay.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, we are back here with Montana Talks. I wanted to, you know, put a bow on that subject here this morning. And we were talking a second ago before the break about the, you know, that big nasty term of regime change. And here in the United States, I think all of us don't want to hear that word anymore and don't want to be involved in it. But then look over there in Iran, and that evil, murderous, dictatorial theocracy going on over there that is obviously going to stay in place now, because all we did was hit the nuke sites and a couple of, and Israel hit a bunch of the tactical military sites over there. But other than that, we are backing up. So where do we go from here with, or where does Israel go from here as far as dealing with that evil regime is?
Well, you know, just because Bibi and President Trump are saying they are not going to be about regime change doesn't mean that they aren't doing things back channels and behind the scenes. You know, like I said earlier, Mossad is still in place on the ground. Now, while we can't go in and do a military operation to, you know, get the regime that we want, because that generally fails, we can certainly make the conditions on the ground available for the people to rise up from within and have regime change. But a lot needs to happen. I mean, this is a regime that has been so oppressive, and any previous revolutions have always been brutally crushed But there's a lot of back channel things going on, and there's a lot of signaling even on social media from Bibi Netanyahu, who just this morning posted a picture of two lions, one with an Israeli flag draped around him and the other one with the Iranian flag draped around him. So he's starting to signal that there is a partnership between Israel and Iran. But the regime, if they fall, that has to come at the hands of the people. They're going to have to rise up and kind of pull off a Persian Spring, just like the Arab Spring, and that's not necessarily something that can happen, you know, within minutes.
Well, thank you very much for the call, Ness. I really appreciate it. She is one of our Spaces friends and has great analysis and perspective on this. Has been doing it for a very long time. And I'm wondering what's going to happen with all of that coming in the future. And will we all of us see here 10, 20 years from now, will our children see a resurgence of that evil regime, and will they have to come back and deal with this at some point? One thing I think was exposed here, it was exposed by the Israelis first and foremost, is Iran was and is a paper tiger. All I've heard for the past 25 years is that, oh, they're going to build this nuke, they're going to have this nuke, and they're going to do this, but oh my gosh, we can't do anything about it because A, B, C, D, and E. And probably one of those big, the thing that was probably A on the list of why we couldn't do anything about it was that they were backed up by Russia. Well, you saw this. Russia didn't want to have anything to do with this. I think basically because they've been mired down over there in Ukraine for 3 years, and so they don't want to have anything to do with this. One point that came out the other day is they had some of their leaders left Iran the other day to go meet with Russia right in the middle of this. And they had to get permission from the Israelis to launch out of the airport with their plane, because we have owned the skies over there for a week now. So nothing was going to move unless the Israelis okayed it. And the Israelis let them do it. And, you know, that they went and met. I guess somebody actually did meet directly with Vladimir Putin, and you just know that with the state of the world today, Vladimir Putin did the good fellas with these Iranians, the Pauly. He, you know, gave him a couple bucks and says, now I got to turn my back on you. He doesn't want to have anything to do with this. But it is incredible, like we opened up the hour with Aaron Flint talking about the history that we are living sometimes day by day by day. We have lived through more historical events in this country in the last 5 years than probably we did in the last 40. It's just crazy. And to try to keep up with it, to try to be informed on what's going on minute by minute by minute, is also very, very difficult. Like, we can be sitting here on the radio and tell you something happened, and 20 minutes later, that's not true anymore. It's really difficult, but it's kind of exciting in a way, too. One thing, bringing up the whole Muslim theocracy point, is today in New York City, they are having their mayoral runoff, the Democrat primary runoff. Between the two leading candidates are Zoran Mamdani and our old buddy Andrew Cuomo, who used to be the governor until he had to resign in disgrace. What everybody's scared of is this guy Mamdani has come flat out. He's not pulling any punches. He's telling you exactly who he is. And what the guy is a absolutely far-left communist Islamic fanatic. And what everybody would foresee if he would win this primary in New York would be a replay of what's going on in London and what's going on over there for God knows how many years since they had an Islamic fanatic become the mayor of London. And it will be, if this guy is able to put in his policies and would stay for, say, two terms, it will be, you know, probably the death of New York City, or a very, very hard blow to them. And a lot of people out there are saying, God, we got to come in. Even people on our side are saying, God, we have to come in. Everybody come in and get behind Cuomo. Come on, we can't have this. Even the socialist, communist newspapers and media, most people in the Democrat Party, they're all out there saying, we have to vote for Cuomo. You cannot vote for this guy. Which is unusual, because normally they want the most leftist communist guy they can find. But they know where this is headed. But I'll give you my contrarian opinion on this, is that it's too late. And New York, look at what they have done in just the last couple of years. The people of New York, the voters of New York, convicted President Trump on those ridiculous illegal charges there in their kangaroo court there in New York City. They seem to be, no matter how bad the crime gets, no matter how bad the taxes get, and the suffocating communist city and state governments that they keep voting for, no matter how bad it gets, they vote for more. They can't be saved. And what they need right now is to just get to their pain threshold. And you're going to find out today, you know, do they need to get to that pain threshold or not? Right now, last poll I saw was you've got this Mamdani leading Cuomo by a couple of points, three, four points. And it popped up just the other day. It had Cuomo ahead until the last day. And now Mamdani has popped up on top. But I think they need to feel it. They haven't felt it hard enough yet. I guess, you know, being locked down during COVID wasn't bad enough, and the crime and the taxes and all that. All of it's not bad enough for that. They still want to vote for more Democrats, right? That's just why nobody's even talking about the Republican, right? Because they know whoever wins this primary with the Democrats is going to be there. It's just a joke. So they just need to reach their pain threshold. Nobody deserves it more than they do. And I made a joke with people the other day on Spaces. Like, you guys know the movie Escape from New York? The classic, the Duke of New York, he is a number one. Remember, the Duke of New York had taken over as the king of the Manhattan Island prison there in Escape from New York, because they had turned the whole place into a prison. And that's who I'm voting for. If I can get my absentee ballot from New York City, and, you know, I am definitely going to vote for the Duke. I'm going to write him in. And if any of y'all are there in New York right now, write in the Duke. There's got to be a place on there for, you know, a write-in. Write in the Duke, and then write in because he's a number one. But that's going to be, we'll hear that news by the end of the day of who won this. And it will be a up or down signal on the state of New York City. It's going to be very interesting. There is the music, and I see we've got our phone lines lit up. We got line one, Kat. Kat, you hang by, and we will get to you right after the break. And I know we've got other people standing by also to talk to. You guys hang. We might wait till after the top of the hour to get to you, all right? We will be right back with Montana Talks.
Waking up on the right side. This is the Sean Hannity Morning Minute.
All of the talk and what the Israelis have been able to pull off is miraculous also. All of this is going to be studied. What Donald Trump did with these three facilities, both Bordeaux, Natanz, and Esfahan. All three of these facilities, what he has been able to do is now made the world a safer place, a much safer place. And what our military have been able to pull off here, you should be extraordinarily proud of. If you were ever going to do this, this was the time to do it at the level of safety that you would want for any American soldier that was flying a B-2 with these bunker buster bombs.
From coast to coast, from sea to shining sea, it's the Sean Hannity Show.
Hey, Sean Hannity here. You know, I've been buying precious metals. Somebody gave me great advice. I'm so grateful every day that I did, and I've been doing it for decades. Every paycheck I get, no matter what, I put aside a portion of money to diversify into precious metals. Now, especially during uncertain times, remember the 2008 financial crisis. Who do I choose to make my gold and silver purchases with? What company do I now use? Who do I trust? Well, I've been partnering with a great company for 3 years. I am a customer. The company's called Gold Co. Gold Co. will send you right now a free 2025 gold and silver kit to learn more about diversifying with precious metals. Now, this kit from Gold Co. has been a huge help to me. I think you'll learn a valuable lesson. You'll also learn about their unlimited bonus silver offer. Now, you're not going to want to miss out. All you have to do is call, no obligation, 855-815-GOLD, or just go to HannityGold.com. That's 855-815-GOLD, or go to the website HannityGold.com.
Here's a look at your Montana weather for Billings and Bozeman. With mainly sunny conditions across the area for today, we'll see high temperatures ranging from the mid and upper 70s. Isolated shower storm chances late towards Billings mainly. As we head into tonight, still a few isolated showers or storms possible, mainly towards the Billings area. Partly cloudy otherwise, with overnight lows from the mid-40s in Bozeman to the mid-50s in Billings. That will see partly sunny skies Wednesday. That's a look at your Montana weather on Montana Talks. I'm Paul Frombley.
Hey, if you guys missed it, it was very early in the 6 o'clock hour of Monday's Montana Talks. Yellowstone County Commissioner Mike Waters is also a retired lieutenant colonel and Air Force B-1 bomber pilot veteran. We got his take on these B-2 bombers and the successful operation in Iran over the weekend. Great to get his insight as an actual bomber pilot. In fact, he was on one of the first bombing missions over Afghanistan following 9/11. Full audio, MontanaTalks.com.
Broadcasting live across the big sky, Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Welcome back, welcome back. And as promised, on line one, we have Kat. Good morning, Kat. Do you hear me?
Yes, I hear you loud and clear. Good morning, John, and thanks to our veterans. You're doing an amazing job, of course. And we had the great Ms. Nellie on this morning. That was even better. So, you know, this morning, should we talk about Lou Jones and his bloated budget or my promotion and the rhino removal project? It's like a choose-your-own-adventure on conservative talk radio this morning. But, no, seriously, though, Lou Jones, first of all, is my number one rhino in Montana. He sits on the Appropriations Committee and bloated our budget. Lou states the budget represents legislative priority and the needs of Montana, then said the budget is actually balanced. So basically, Lou is okay with allowing the governor to line item veto instead of balancing the budget in session. So Greg has vetoed things like $100,000 to fund PTSD, whether you agree with it or not, it's still a fact. But hundreds of thousands in pork projects passed, like increasing government by 18%, just to name a few examples. So that's why Lou is number one on my rhino list and needs to go. But to your listeners, I was promoted. Now I'm the state chapter lead for the rhino removal project and the manager of all the other state chapter leads, and I'm super honored by that. But real quick, John, I have an ask from your listeners. We are asking for $5 contributions from my Montana supporters. I have links in all my social media platforms. So when you contribute $5, you can list in the comments Montana, and it'll go straight to my efforts to help real America First candidates in our state. We do educational materials, billboards, events, so we can flush these rhinos like we flush John Tester, okay? So that's my ask this morning. I want to thank you very much, John. God bless, and God bless Montana.
Well, hey, hold up there. I got a question for you. With Aaron was talking yesterday about, I believe he was talking yesterday about the vetoes from the line item vetoes from Governor Gianforte, and said this was the vetoes cut hundreds of millions of dollars out of that budget. Do you know where it ended up? You know, because the bloated giant pig they set up there was an increase for 18% of the Montana budget. Do you know where that number ended up?
You know, John, I don't want to talk to that topic because I don't think the dust is settled yet. So I could present, you know, assume, but I'm not going to. So to answer your questions, it's not really finished yet. So I don't want to preemptively speak on it.
Okay. Next question. What we also talked about yesterday, too, was now we've got till 2027, and we have one more legislative session here with a Republican governor that we're sure of. We don't know past 2028 anything could happen. So we've got one more session here. So the Republicans have got to figure out how to put down this rebellion inside their tent and have a productive conservative session next time. I don't know their plan. I haven't heard what plan they are going to do to achieve that. What is your plan with your group?
That's an excellent question, John. This is the thing what everybody has to remember. We can't change the party. The party is never going to change. And we could get conservative people in, but they're still going to go with the same playbook, right? That's why I can operate outside of the party, okay? So that's where our project comes in. But, you know, when we're primarying people like Lou Jones, George and Melissa Nicolakakis, Brad Barker, these people that really had not necessarily Montana's best interests involved, but maybe lobbying money and things like that involved. When we primary them and they lose, that's going to send a serious message. We're not playing around anymore. So now the politicians
We are coming up to the break here, up to the top of the hour. Really appreciate the call, and we will see you all back here after the break, back with Montana Talks.
This is the Montana Economic Minute.
There's a concept used to describe different ways of producing energy known as energy density. You might think of it as the amount of land needed to produce a given amount of power from different fuels, wind, solar, coal, gas, or nuclear. Physical footprint on a wind farm or a solar farm is huge compared to fuels with higher energy density such as gas and especially nuclear. But as blogger Austin Vernon has described, despite the extremely high energy density of nuclear fuel, technology has now emerged as a low-cost way to produce electricity, especially compared to alternatives like gas. And the reasons why might surprise you. Yes, regulation and fear of contamination are factors, but the biggest factor is purely economic. Under current technology, a controlled nuclear reaction energy source is a low heat source, much lower than a combined cycle gas turbine, which has more than twice the thermal efficiency. The only way to get a lot of power out of a nuclear plant is to massively scale up the entire process, and that's expensive. I'm Patrick Barkey.
Brought to you by the University of Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research.